I'd like to call the House Finance Committee to order. Time is 10:38. Members present are Representative Wilson, Guerra, Kawasaki, Co-Chair Thompson, myself, Co-Chair Newman, Representative Guttenberg, Gaddis, and Edgman. Representative Munoz has an excused absence today. Today we'll take up House Bill 1001 relating to the state's operating capital mental health budgets. Members have a committee substitute in their packets. We don't plan on moving the CS today. We'll just introduce it, adopt it for a working document so members can go over it and start scrubbing it down. So, Mr. Co-Chair, can we have a motion to adopt the committee substitute as a working document?
Yes, Mr. Co-Chair. I move that the committee adopt the CS for House Bill 1001, version 29-GH1318/W, Wallace, 42815, for the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Hearing no objections, we do have the CS before the committee for a working document. I'd like to invite David Teal and Pete Eklund to come up and explain the changes in the committee substitute.
Good morning. For the record, my name is Pete Eklund, staff to the Finance Committee. Mr. Chairman, the work draft you have in front of you is basically a simplified version of the budget bill that the governor introduced yesterday. What it is, it's simply the differences, the additions, and the differences between the conference committee operating budget bill that you all passed a few days ago and what the governor introduced yesterday. So in the big picture, you can see probably two reports on your desk, two one-page reports. One of them is unrestricted general funds, and it shows on the first column would be the governor special T column. You can see it has different numbers there for different departments, but the bottom line is the total is $54,954,500 in unrestricted UGF was in the governor's introduced bill that was different than the conference committee bill. If you go all the way over to column four, what that tells you is the totals in column four match the totals in column one, meaning the committee substitute you just adopted is all the governor's changes from the conference committee bill. And just in general, Mr. Chairman, section one of the committee substitute in front of you, we've kind of been referring to this as the meat and potatoes, I guess, of the bill, of the differences.
Excuse me, Mr. Eklund, I'd like to welcome Representative Pruitt. Thanks. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We've been referring to the section one as kind of the meat and potatoes section of the bill, meaning that it has various additions from the conference committee substitute that you adopted a couple days ago. It has various additions in different departments, and you can see them listed in the bill, in the first three, four pages of the bill. One thing I did want to note is on page, the end of page three, the bottom of page three, and the top of page four, you will see on page four, the governor's intention was to fund the contracts for unionized employees, but to not fund the contract, or excuse me, when I say the contracts, I mean the COLA, the 2.5% raise that may or may not occur on July 1st. The governor's intent is to fund that 2.5% increase for unionized employees, but to not fund them for non-unionized employees. Then, Mr. Chairman, pages 5, 6, 7, and 8, 9, 10, and 11 of the bill are just fund, what we call fund roll-ups. It's all the different funding sources that fund Section 1 of the bill. The next significant section of the bill starts on page 12, section 4. And that section of the bill is all of the transactions that the governor would like to see for Medicaid expansion. That's on pages 12 and 12, basically, and then there's fund roll-ups for on pages 13 and 14 again for that section 4 of the bill. Then starting on page 15 is what we call the language section of this bill. And the significant changes in the language section of this bill compared to the conference committee bill is that the governor would like to fund fully fund the BSA, which would be a $16.5 million increase from the conference committee bill that you all passed. And you can also see another difference on line 1 of page 15. The governor's bill, the governor would like to use $118 million from the in-state natural gas pipeline fund to help fund public education. The conference committee substitute you passed used $157 million from the ASAP, or the in-state gas pipeline fund. Then on page 15, section 8, you can see that's where the contracts would be approved and the COLA would be funded for unionized employees. Then on page 16, there are new CBR provisions starting on section 9 that would have CBR access votes for FY 2015 and 2016. Those are the main differences, Mr. Chairman, in this bill compared to the conference committee bill that you passed previously.
Thank you, Mr. Eklund. The committee would like to welcome Representative Sadler. Welcome, Representative Sadler. Questions for Mr. Eklund or Mr. Teal at this time? Representative Garrett.
Thank you. Just a comment, Mr. Chair. I don't know how long you intend this hearing to go on, but in my understanding is what the governor's trying to do is move us forward so we get a budget, and that a lot of these items, some of these items, are sort of placeholder items for that the governor recognizes we may move around back and forth. But I think it is a good effort on the governor's part to get us towards a budget that we can pass, and I think he totally understands that we'll all be working together to try and come up with a budget we can pass.
Thank you, Representative Guerin. You know, the CS looks a little different than the original version. We thought it much better to have a 18-page document as opposed to a 77-page document. We want to make sure the public's very aware of what's going on and the easiness to read this. Representative Gaddis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I've been getting a lot of emails that talk about fully funding education, and I heard you use the same expression. What fully funds? And I'd like to think that that's just an expression that's used. So when we talk about the governor wanting to fully fund, I never figured out what fully funding means. It means different things to different people, I think.
Through the chair, Representative Gaddis, in this sense, it just means basically that the statutory BSA for FY16 would be 5880, and when you run the projections for student counts through and multiply it through the formula at the statutory BSA of 5880, the conference committee report was $16.5 million less than that projected amount. This CS would fund it at 100% of that projected amount.
And thank you, Mr. Chair, and that answered it. I do have to say that different people have a different idea what fully fund means. So thank you for that clarification.
You're exactly right, Representative Gaddis. Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I just have some questions on the Section 7, starting with Section 7. So we would be changing on the fund transfers from the in-state gas line from 157 that was in ours to 118. So then would the rest of it just be coming from general funds?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, yes, you would see on line 8 of page 15 that $1.6 billion figure. The general, that's from the general fund. The general fund figure in the conference committee report was $95 million, I believe. 95 or 950 million something. I don't remember the exact number.
And a follow-up. So on Section 8, then, on the salary and benefit adjustments, so with all these different areas, we would be, again, that would all come out of general funds to fund each and every one of these COLAs that are in Section 8.
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, that is correct, and that dollar amount can be found on page 4 of the bill. It's actually the sum of those two amounts, is it not?
It's kinds of funds.
Oh, thank you. Mr. Teal corrected me. It's on page 4 of the bill. You see on line 6, $56,386,100. Okay. That would be what it would that's the dollar amount, not just UGF, but the total dollar amount that would take to fund both the unionized and non-unionized COLA. So if you subtract out the $21 million found on line 8, the net of that is what would be what would take to fund the unionized contracts. So roughly $35 million. In total funds. The UGF portion is, let me see if I can find it in the roll-up. Can you find it in the roll-up, Dave?
Go ahead. Page 5, line 28.
So through the chair, Representative Wilson, on page 5, line 28, I'm told.
Okay.
That is the UGF portion needed to fund, according to Mr. Teal, the union contracts.
Okay. And one more question, Mr. Chair.
Representative Wilson.
Okay, so one of the what my emails have said have been we need to fund this the operating budget. And so Section 9 starts talking about the Constitutional Budget Reserve Fund, but it also starts talking about other funds that aren't dedicated but might have been made for specific purposes, like the Higher Education Investment Fund. So let's say that we're not able to come to agreement on the CBR vote. Do you have any idea how much funding is available, and not counting the permit fund reserves either, but the other funds and all different kinds of things that would be out there that this budget would have to get down to if we could not tap the CBR?
Representative Wilson, are you speaking of FY15 or FY16?
FY16. My understanding is FY15 is taken care of with the forward funding for education took care of FY15. So right now, as far as a constitutional budget reserve vote, we would be talking about just FY16. And currently, we were looking at the CBR or other funds. And my question, so that the public understands, this budget would have to be what if we weren't able to do the constitutional budget reserve and we did not want to touch the earning reserves in the PFD? Is it $2 billion, $1 billion?
Yeah. Through the chair, Representative Wilson, I don't remember the exact number for the FY16 spring forecast, but it was somewhere in the neighborhood of $2.2 billion, if I remember, but Mr. Teal could probably give you a better answer for that.
Teal? For the record, I'm David Teal, Director of Legislative Finance Division. For FY16, as Pete just said, we've got about $2.2 billion in revenue and about a $3.2 billion deficit with that money, so that you're starting with a $3.2 billion deficit. From there you go, you ask about the funds that could be used. Primarily that would be a power cost equalization, roughly $1 billion. Higher Education Fund has $450-460 million in it. After that it gets quite small, less than $50 million in any other fund. If you added all those funds up, it would probably be something on the order of $200 million or so. So you'd have there's perhaps a total of $1.6 billion in various funds and accounts that could be used, which would still leave you about $1.6 billion short of filling that $3.2 billion gap.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. I just think it was very, very important for the for our constituents to understand, you know, there are different options and these are some, and I don't know what the intent is of the chair when we start looking at this or what you want us to do as chairs of our subcommittees. But $1.6 billion, having to take that much out, that after what we've already taken out is an extreme amount, but that is an option. So I just want to make sure that was on the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think the governor filed a placeholder budget for us to work on. I think his direction is that we work together to come up with a budget that people can accept. It'll include things that some people don't like on one side or the other. But I will tell you from my perspective and my caucus's perspective, there is no interest whatsoever in shutting down government or doing the things that were just hinted at. The goal is to work together to move forward on a budget that works for education, for the things that work for the public. You can raise the specter that the last speaker could raise the specter that she might spend the permanent fund, but I'm not interested in that.
Okay, those are a lot of discussions to have as we go down and different comments that we're going to have on how we're going to be doing what. Do we have any further questions for Mr. Teal or Mr. Eklund?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Edgman.
Yeah, can we get, and I presume this is hopefully our last meeting for a while, at least on this subject.
Who knows?
But I think I'd like to get some clarity in the event that the CBR vote is not achieved, how much money we have and how long state government can be funded. I mean, I've heard various accounts, so with Mr. Teal here and maybe Ms. Pitney, whomever can address that. I think I'd like to get that question addressed.
That's fine. We can have Mr. Teal, if you want to take a shot at that, or we can have the OMB director up. Might be able to help us out there.
I'll take a shot at it, Mr. Chairman.
And we'll be hearing these numbers quite a bit through this process.
You've got $2.2 billion in revenue, and you've got a $3.2 billion deficit. So you've got nowhere near enough money to get through the year. That $2.2 billion is also not available all at once at the beginning of the year. It comes in through the year. So you've got a cash flow problem. That can be resolved to some extent by issuing revenue anticipation notes or just borrowing, if you want to call it that, so that it would be difficult to issue notes exceeding the amount of revenue that we expect, which is $2.2 billion. So even if we were to borrow that money, it would have to be repaid fairly quickly. And so your real issue is cash flow. According to my discussions with people from the Department of Revenue, there should be cash to get us through September, October, some people say even into November with extraordinary measures. But I would look at it as September is probably about as far as you can go through the year and fund operations before you run out of cash.
Can I follow up then? So going back to the funds that you just talked about, I think that totaled up to $1.6 billion, higher education fund, the PC account, which let the world know that will not go by easily by me. In terms of draining that account and my real colleagues, but so we got $1.6 billion there, but that would take appropriation authority to get into, wouldn't it?
Through the chair, that's exactly right. There, if you were to pass appropriation bill or appropriations taking money from the public education fund and the higher education fund, you would increase your cash flow by about $1.5 billion, which gets you through perhaps January or so. I think the Department of Revenue and the Department of Administration are working on contingency plans to see how they would operate government if a CBR vote were not obtained.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Wilson.
Mr. Chair, I just want to make sure I didn't hear something incorrect. First of all, I want to put on the record, I made my question so we weren't talking about the permanent fund earnings at this time. But I want to make sure on the other funds that aren't dedicated funds. So let's say that we keep everything the way it is right now. Are you saying that, for instance, using the PC, because it's not really mentioned in here, that we would have to pass something for the governor to be able to utilize those funds if there were no other funds available, or all pretty much all savings accounts are available except the the ones that we know that take a vote. So it was my understanding all savings accounts could be tapped except the permanent fund reserves and the constitutional budget reserve. But everything else, since we don't have dedicated funds, could be utilized to keep government going.
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, they could all be tapped with an appropriation. The earnings reserve account, the higher ed fund, public, the power cost equalization, really, and the issue is the same. There's money sitting there that can be accessed with a simple majority vote. The earnings, the CBR takes the supermajority vote. So you've got access to money if you wanted to pass an appropriation. Getting another $1.5 billion or so from those two large funds. And, of course, there's if you wanted to access the earnings reserve account, that, again, is a simple majority vote, and that would completely fill the deficit if you wanted to do that.
So clarification, Mr. Chair. Maybe I'm just not getting it. I understand the two different ones, they take votes. But if we pass an operating budget, which is an appropriation, then all the funds that are not a dedicated fund that doesn't take another vote would be available to fund the operating budget. It still wouldn't be enough. As we heard, we would still be approximately $1.6 billion short. But I just want to make it clear so that everybody understands we don't have dedicated funds, that those funds could be tapped if we don't come to some kind of agreement of where else the money comes from.
And again, through the chair, to clarify, you can tap those funds with an appropriation. They're all considered restricted accounts. They're not dedicated, but they, for instance, would not be swept into the CBR at the end of the year because they are classified as PC endowment fund, the higher education endowment fund, so that although they're sub-funds of the general fund, they're classified as restricted, and a general fund appropriation would not necessarily allow them to spend from those funds without a specific appropriation putting the power cost equalization fund or higher ed fund back into the general fund.
And one last follow-up.
I'll ask it a different way.
Okay. Well, I think it's listed.
To be very clear.
Yeah.
So none of those funds may be appropriated unless they pass through this body and we pass an appropriations bill that spends those funds.
I believe that's correct. But again, I know that the Department of Revenue and Department of Administration are trying to figure out exactly that, what funds can be borrowed from, spent without an appropriation because it's a sub-fund. It's something that the accountants need to do. I do budgets. I'm not an accountant, and they're very different things. And you know, we look at funds in a different way than they do.
So, Mr. Chair, so then with your comment, I'm sorry, I'm really trying to get there. So, if you're on page 16 and 17, why then, if that's what you're saying is true, which I believe you're true, it's true, but why would you have the constitutional budget reserve in Section 9 and then in Section 10 still have the higher education investment fund? So with this bill, would it be the intent that the higher education investment fund would be utilized as well as the CBR with the three-fourths vote and no other funds would be looked at? I mean, I'm just trying to figure out why is a higher education investment fund in here, and none of the others are with the CBR. I don't know. That may be a Ms. Pitney question since this is from the governor's budget.
Through the chair, it's actually from the conference committee budget. The language is repeated here. It refers only to FY15, and the conference committee budget, I guess let's start with the 15 deficit, which was about $3.8 billion. The statutory budget reserve of about 2.8 fills all of the deficit except roughly $1 billion. Then by reducing the FY15 deposit to the public education fund, that gives you that $1 billion, eliminates the deficit. Theoretically, eliminates the need for a supermajority vote to get money from the constitutional budget reserve fund. but it's a little too close for comfort. You're within $50 million of a deficit. We know that oil prices are volatile. We know that they don't actually close the books until months after the year is done. So $50 million is simply not a large enough cushion to say, to promise you that we do not have a deficit in FY15. So Section 10 says if and only if you don't have enough general funds to take the amount of the deficit from the higher education fund. It goes into effect only if the constitutional budget supermajority vote fails. So it's just a backstop measure to make sure that you do not run out of money in FY15.
Perfect. Thank you.
Thank you. I just don't want people to be scaring people outside of this building right now. Mr. T, let me see if I understood what you said correctly. If this group of legislators decides to work across party lines to figure out a budget by the end of the special session, which is what I think should happen, then everything is fine. To get through September, if folks weren't able to work together, which would be a shame, but to get through September, you...
Mr. Chair, can we get away from the political statements here?
Please.
We're trying to handle a budget.
Thank you. Eddie. Mr. Thiel, to get through September, there's which was your estimate about cash flow, September, maybe October or November, there's no need to touch the PCE fund or the earnings reserve. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Thank you.
That's a lot easier. Representative Pruitt?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Mr. Thiel, and this might be towards you. It may be towards Ms. Pitney. I'm not sure. Is there any mechanism that either the administration has or someone out there to borrow from ourselves to help fund government? So, for instance, whether it's from borrowing from the PCE fund or from the higher ed or borrowing from the CBR, any of those things, can we do that in some capacity, or does that have to be, again, authorized through us for them to be able to either touch that or to utilize that, even if they're borrowing from it?
Through the chair, we can borrow from ourselves. I think the Departments of Revenue and Administration are looking at borrowing from those other funds. You can also borrow in markets, issue revenue anticipation notes, which are just short-term borrowing based on anticipated revenue coming in later in the year. And then you'll notice on page 17 at the top, so it's section 9C, it talks there about earnings from the general fund going to pay the CBR. That's typical language in appropriation bills, because it allows us to borrow money from the constitutional budget reserve without a supermajority vote. You have to pay that money back within the year. Otherwise, it becomes a draw. Well, we could, hopefully, borrow from the constitutional budget reserve and not run out of money at all. But at some time during the fiscal year, you must pay it back. And, in fact, the people that would allow the borrowing would have to certify that there will be money there to pay back the Constitutional Budget Reserve Fund. With a deficit and no appropriations to fill that deficit, you have no guaranteed way of paying back those loans to the Constitutional Budget Reserve. If they can't certify that the money will be there, then we cannot borrow from the Constitutional Budget Reserve. So that even this, though this provision, Section C, is a simple majority provision, it doesn't do any good unless the supermajority vote is obtained.
Follow up on Mr. Chair?
Representative Pruitt.
So thank you for the clarification on the Constitutional Budget Reserve. What about the other, like the PCE, higher education, all those funds that are within the general fund? Can we borrow from our own sub-accounts of the general fund?
Through the chair, I think that's Representative Wilson's point when she says, even if you could borrow from them, even if you appropriated the money from them instead of borrowed from them, you would still have a $1.5 to $1.6 billion deficit that,
understandable,
after you filled or after you borrowed or used available sub-accounts. And so then you have no place left to borrow from.
So, Mr. Chair,
Representative,
and I understand that for next year. I'm actually, in this case, with the smaller funds, and I'm referring to the discussion related to this particular year where we could be $50 million short and we're really close for comfort. Would there be the potential that at least for the remainder of this year we could cover ourselves without having to go into that Constitutional Budget Reserve because we could borrow from one of our sub-accounts, basically extend our opportunity from allow ourselves to fund ourselves through the end of this fiscal year in some capacity?
Again, through the chair, that's exactly what Section 10 does.
Okay.
Is say that if we are short, we're going to take money from the higher education fund. And you could have just as well said, and the power cost equalization fund and several other funds if you'd wanted to, but we don't expect a deficit to be very large, certainly less than $100 million. So there's no need to dip into other funds. The higher education fund is sufficient to do this.
And then would not want to make those funds available if we don't have to.
Right. And so the last thing would be, in this case, our policy call has been to appropriate money from those. Again, if there's not a mechanism though to borrow from it. What I'm trying to get at is, of course, if we remove from the higher education fund, we're going to be impacting that particular fund. It would be the same way if it were PCE or any of the others. In this case, we're just making the policy call to go ahead and appropriate from it, as opposed to a policy call that we could have made that said we're going to borrow from it if we're short, with the understanding or the intent to replenish it once we have money or once we were able to get out of the CBR.
Through the chair, I guess I would assume that it's exactly the same thing. There's an appropriation here from the fund, and if you obtain a supermajority vote, and if you had to take money from the higher education fund, you could replenish that money. You could also say that the higher education fund has a surplus of perhaps $60 million in it. In other words, the interest generated by that fund is more than sufficient to pay the scholarships and grants that are awarded from the fund. And a balance of $50 to $60 million less would still allow those grants and scholarships to be paid. So at some future date, if you did have to borrow the money, you may choose to repay it or not repay it.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Sadler?
Thank you. Mr. Teal, there's been a discussion about revenue anticipation notes. I guess it would be nice to get some information on the record about those. What would be the potential source? What's the interest rate? What's the cost? What's the authorization procedure? Just to help us understand revenue anticipation notes better.
Through the chair, that would be going to financial markets, issuing short-term notes based on anticipated revenue. The interest rate should be fairly low on those, and let's just take, for example, if you issued $2 billion worth of notes at, you know, something on the order of 2.5-3%, and you didn't have them for a full year, so let's just consider a 2% rate for a year. That would be $40 million cost of borrowing that money. You would run into some problems with the federal government if you tried to make those tax-free. You don't need to make them tax-free. The difference between the tax-free interest rate and the taxable interest rate is quite small, and it would be much easier to just issue taxable revenue anticipation notes. But again, the cost is not insignificant of issuing those notes, and then, you know, they're not uncommon. It's not something that the credit raters would immediately say, oh, these guys are in a world of hurt here. I think the municipality of Anchorage borrows or issues revenue anticipation notes. We do it every year with drinking water bonds. The state. Every year we issue short-term drinking water and clean water bonds. So there's nothing inherently wrong about revenue anticipation notes. If you're worried about borrowing in general, I think, or credit ratings, I think the raters would probably look more at a political impasse like the one that's occurring now as a greater credit risk or indication of a greater credit risk than if we were to borrow with revenue anticipation notes. And that's because the credit raters see Alaska's credit strength not just as having reserves, which is a big issue, it's being able to access those reserves. If you cannot access the reserves, then the credit raters would perceive a problem. So they take into account many things other than just the amount of revenue and the amount of wealth that we have.
Representative Saylor?
Did I hear you say that the inability to get three-quarter vote to access our reserves can hurt Alaska's bond rating or credit rating?
Through the chair, that's my opinion. I think it would impact credit raters' opinion.
And is there a thank you, Lester. With the RANs, are they limited by structure, by custom to 1 year, or is that just a customary term?
Through the chair, it is not customary. They are issued in anticipation of revenue coming in later. They must be repaid. Basically within 18 months. If you borrowed right away, you do not have to pay them off exactly by the end of the year, but you must pay them off fairly soon.
Representative Guttenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And that was Representative Sadler's line of questioning was where I was going. So the cost to the state, not just in interest, but challenge to the bond rating, is something that would be looked at, and that would be both an economic and a financial situation that put us at risk just because we don't want to get around a supermajority vote. Are there any other things on the table that we would be risking by not being able to access those funds? You'd mentioned bond rating. I mean, clearly if we do revenue bonds in anticipation of a revenue that we already know we don't have coming in next year to pay off because we have another deficit next year, we actually wouldn't be able to do that. Would that be correct?
Through the chair, the revenue anticipation can always be issued as long as you have revenue anticipated. In terms of other effects, I don't know of any. But that's not to say there aren't any.
If I follow up, Mr. Chair. So you're talking about you'd be able to borrow revenue bonds in anticipation of the next year, and next year you'd be able to pay them back because you do have them. But wouldn't that increase the size of the deficit the next year as well?
Through the chair, the revenue that you're anticipating would be the current year revenue, not next year's revenue. And yes, the interest does increase your fiscal problem because borrowing money is not free. As I said, it might cost $40 million. Who knows? It might cost $20 million. But it's still, there is a cost of issuing and paying the interest on any debt that you incur.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I don't think we want to get into borrowing from the bank to pay our loan to our house payment. Representative Sadler.
Yeah, I want to clarify the previous questioners. My question and the point I think you made was that the absence of getting the votes to access the CBR in HB 72 is actually a potential for hurting the state's credit rating. The inability to access our reserves is what can hurt our credit rating. Is that, am I hearing you correct?
Through the chair, I believe so. I mean, it's not just 72. I mean, you have another opportunity to do it. I don't think the markets are going to look at it as one vote failed and therefore, you know, danger. It's more, did you work things out? And if you go home with things worked out, that's probably all that matters in the end.
Chairman? Danger, Will Robinson.
Chair Robinson.
Representative Esmer.
Yeah. How many people are there? So, David, can you, Mr. Chairman, thank you for a little latitude in this discussion. Yep. I think it's really been helpful to me and hopefully helpful to others watching this discussion, really what's transpired with or through the conference committee process and where we're at today with the bill that we have before us. But to Mr. Teal, can you help me then better understand what our total drawdown is of our savings accounts, given that we're looking at a $3.2 billion deficit in FY16, plus, of course, we've used 2.8 of the SBS to pay off bills for the year that we're in now, fiscal year 15, plus $1 billion drawdown on the public education fund. So how much have we used of the so-called savings accounts? And I'll close by saying, when I see savings accounts, sometimes I see it in the context of just CBR and SB, the SBS fund. Other times it's characterized as everything that we've got out there, all the sub-accounts included. So if we can get some clarity on that, maybe a quick response.
Through the chair, I think the simplest way to look at that is the deficit for 15 is roughly $3.8 billion. The deficit for 16 is roughly $3.2 billion. So you're looking at $7 billion total for the 2 years. Regardless of where it comes from, and if you want to know where that comes from, it's $2.8 billion from the statutory budget reserve, about $1 billion from the public education fund, and theoretically the rest of it from the constitutional budget reserve fund.
So what would that leave us in savings accounts?
Through the chair, I think it's roughly $6 billion in all in the constitutional budget reserve. The public education fund would be empty at the end of 16, and the SBR, statutory budget reserve, would be empty. So you're looking at your only reserve account would be the supermajority access to the constitutional budget reserve, which, you know, I don't remember the exact number, but it should be somewhere around $6
billion. Mr. Representative. Chairman, then, so we would have, again, in savings accounts, not talking about the permanent fund, that's not part of my thinking as well, but we would have that amount in the CBR plus the sub-accounts, which is $1.6 billion, so we're looking at somewhere close to $8 billion maybe, but more, $7
billion. Through the chair, that's one way to look at it. We were looking at it as the reserves being the SBR and the CBR, and that was the whole model showing that after 16, your CBR may get you through about two more years. And then that account would also be empty after FY18.
Okay, so again, just through the chair, so I'm clear. We're looking at about, if my numbers are right, about $7.6 billion in liquid savings accounts going forward.
Correct. Okay. Including power cost equalization.
Yes.
Yeah.
Chairs, I have one less interesting question for having less
One direct question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Interesting to a lot of people. David, I haven't gone through this, and I know you know the numbers. There was roughly $100-some-odd million in the Marine Highway System in what passed in conference. And how does that compare to what's in this budget? That's just the Marine Highway part.
Through the chair, there's an additional $7 million of general funds being added to the Marine Highway System in this budget.
And through the chair.
Just clarifying on that, I believe there, the Alaska Marine Highway System total appropriation was about
$130 million.
Right.
Somewhere in that neighborhood.
Rex, about $140 million.
$130 million, I think, somewhere in that neighborhood. I don't know exactly.
$130 to $140 million was the total appropriation to the Marine Highway System. This asked to add another $7 million in.
And through the chair, just one other sort of question that took me a long time to understand. And just in the Marine Highway System, what was included in the budget that passed the conference committee included sort of fuel trigger money that other agencies couldn't use, and in the current budget is that fuel trigger money there too, and so it's just an overall $7 million difference. Is that how it works?
Yes, sir.
Mr. Eklund.
Through the chair, Representative Guerra, and I don't remember the exact number, but yeah, it's roughly between $130 and $140 million between the Marine Highway Fund, which is about a third of that number, and UGF, which is about two thirds of that number. And that, what you're referring to is in FY15, fuel trigger money, fuel appropriation money. After speaking with OMB again last night, Ms. Pitney, who's behind us, I think, still, she believes there's roughly $5 million left that would go, that could go to the Marine Highway Fund that could be used in FY16.
That's good enough for now. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, just to clarify, that's FY15 money that would be carried forward into 16. This bill adds another $7
million. Right. All right. Thank you. Any further questions from the committee at this point? Okay. The plan is for now, is we'll close the committee, let people go examine this, talk to the departments, talk to who they need to talk to, and we will come back to it at a future date. So thank you for your attendance. We'll return.